With the August 7th primary fast approaching, there are several county races where there are only two candidates running. Here, the primary vote is of no consequence. In fact, the District 3 County Commissioner race is the only contest that will be affected when four candidates will be narrowed down to two. In this race, the decision is restricted to South County voters. Still, it's never too early to start thinking about the November 6th general election, especially with regard to law enforcement issues. Tonight, we are broadcasting audio from a July forum that featured sheriff candidates Joe Knoll and Dave Stanko, followed by Mike Haas and James Kennedy, who are seeking the office of prosecuting attorney. This presentation is part of KPTC's ongoing election coverage and will be available to stream along with other stories on the election page on our website, kptz.org. The event was recorded by Sonny Flores. I'm Charlie Bermant. I edited the original tape along with writing and reading this clever introduction. A special treat for KPTZ listeners is the presence of our own toss salad chef, Phil Andrus, as moderator.
Forum. Candidate Forum is the second in a series of three, sponsored by the American Association of University Women and by the League of Women Voters. We're going to start with Joe Knoll and David Stanko, candidates for sheriff. They will each get to make a three-minute opening statement. We flipped a coin, and the winner of the coin flip, or the loser as he may see it, is Joe Knoll.
Well, thank you everybody for coming. My name is Joe Knoll, and I'm running for the office of Jefferson County Sheriff. I'm currently a detective at the sheriff's office. I've been there 28 years in the department. During that time, I've held the positions of patrol deputy, detective, chief criminal deputy. I was appointed the sheriff at one time, and I've also been the undersheriff. I grew up in Tacoma, and I've lived here with my family for the past 33 years. My wife, Terry, and I have been married for 40 years, and we have three daughters who went to the Chimicum schools and still live in the county. We need change in the sheriff's office, and that's why I'm running. I believe strongly in community policing, and I practice it throughout my career. To me, it means creating a network of relationships and trust between the staff and all kinds of people. It means returning phone calls and checking in on people and reaching out to people who won't be coming to a community coffee. I would also like to follow through on some things we've started but haven't finished. Over the last 4 years, we've had some training programs that need to be completed or improved upon. One of these is Blue Courage training. We need to complete that course, and we need to provide more than the state-required bare-bones minimum for de-escalation training. We need to finish the accreditation process. Accreditation is more than a certificate. It's a process, and we should complete it with staff instead of volunteers, so the staff will have pride and ownership. I would not continue with the Operation Stone Garden grant. It has been my job to help administer it, but I've never been comfortable taking this money from Homeland Security. It's true that we have a shared interest in stopping human trafficking and smuggling, and we get some equipment, but the required patrol shifts bother me. On Stone Garden shifts, the Border Patrol tells us where we can patrol, and we give them the names of people we contact for their database, and I don't think that's right. We also are asked to provide them with the number of subjects we turned over to Border Patrol and the number of immigration cases we had for that shift. And I believe I can raise the morale of the staff. Low morale makes us less effective, and some good people have already left for other jobs. I have the support of the staff, but I did warn them that 2 weeks after I'm elected, they might not like me like they do now. I have clear expectations, and I'll hold them and myself accountable, but I know that we are up for the challenge. Thank you.
And David, you can step to the podium or use your microphone there as you wish.
Sure, I appreciate that. I'll step up here for my opening here. It's been a privilege to be your sheriff for the last 4 years. You elected me to put the sheriff house in order. And let's get to it. I ran on a platform of assessment, change, and community. Assessors found hardworking deputies, but operational neglect, dysfunction. We have an evidence room that was not inventoried for 20 years. My opponent was in charge of that. We have several pending internal investigations. My opponent was the acting sheriff. They weren't done. We had an unnecessary military Hummer, a SWAT team, and stealth police cars, adverse to community policing. We no longer have the Hummer. We no longer have the stealth police cars. We have black and whites. And we no longer have a SWAT team. We have an ALICE perspective. We have an active shooter team. Management resisted the change with a new world software that has now been implemented. Management resistance to best practice policies, that's Lexapol. My opponent was in charge of that. It is now implemented by the undersheriff, Art Frank. And we have never had consistent employee evaluations. We now have those. Inconsistent supervision, direction, lack of organizational planning, mission, and values. We now have a mission statement and values that I didn't design. The employees did. The community did. It's not me. It's community and employee driven. The last 4 years, I've had to make tough decisions. I've fired people, demoted people. I've had to discipline people, reassign people for the organization and a community benefit. No decisions that I've made have been done in a vacuum. None. I've had to consult with the HR, union, county people. I have a serious job balancing a $6 million budget, civil, jail, patrol, investigation. We have a Ho Indian tribe. We have West End. We have 50 employees. You need a multitasking, visionary person to succeed. I'm that person. Being one-dimensional does not cut it. We are working on assessment, strategic plan, our citizen advisory committee, more community engagement. As former President Obama said in his six pillars of 21st century policing is community engagement. It's us and the community. It's not an individual. It's not I can do it. It's we can do it together. Also, our accreditation process is being done for a paid staff person, not a volunteer. He's a retired captain. He knows exactly what he's doing, and we are moving towards completion. And our strategic plan is a living document done by our employees. They just met, and it's a living document. They meet every 3 months and have it updated. Thank you for your time.
And once again, my notes have disappeared.
May I please? I'm innocent.
At least of that. All right. So we will have now questions. Questions from the audience. Step up to the microphone. I think a line will probably form. And each candidate has 2 minutes. The question should be to both candidates, and they will have 2 minutes apiece to answer. We have about 30 minutes for questions, so make your question a question and make it brief. All right. Libby Palmer.
Thank you. It's wonderful that both of you are in the sheriff's office and have worked there this long so that I can expect an answer from both of you. And it regards Operation Stone Garden funds. We understand your positions about it. However, is this a public record? In other words, is it possible for you to tell us during the hours that your deputies were being funded by Operation Stone Garden, they met with 0 immigrants, 20 immigrants, what were the natures of those encounters, and what happened as a result of that? Is that public information?
David Stanko first. And you could, use that microphone.
Hi, Libby. Good to see you. As you know, we've met several times in my office with you and Kate Franco. In fact, Kate Franco is helping us with interpretation, which we really appreciate. Without that, it wouldn't be as helpful. To answer your question, the information that is given is not secret. Everything we do is public information. And the grant is a FEMA grant, Federal Emergency Management Association. It is only being administered by Homeland Security. You mentioned immigrants several times. It's not immigrants. The grant is for terrorism reduction, drug trafficking reduction, and human trafficking reduction. On the second page in paragraph C, it says we do not enforce Title VIII, period. But yes, the information that you request is available, absolutely.
Thanks for the question. That's a good one. I would argue that the information is not available to the public because we provide it to Homeland Security, to the Border Patrol. And I can't speak for the Border Patrol if they would give that information out. But I would think that someone that, if it's just information that's going out on someone we contacted, that may not be available. If they weren't arrested or commit a crime, there's no reason for the public to know that. The other thing, my opponent tries to make it sound like the Stone Garden grant is just for human trafficking or terrorism. It is for those things, but it is for finding undocumented immigrants. And I know on his website he has part of the form a part of a page on there, which I'm surprised that that's on there since it's a for your information only, law enforcement sensitive. But he only puts a little part where it says we don't enforce Title VIII. We don't enforce the immigration law. Well, we may not enforce the immigration law, but we provide information to the people that do. So I think people in here are smart enough to figure out for themselves what that's all about. And you know, we don't want people to have we don't want humans to be trafficked. We don't want terrorists in the area. We don't have to have Border Patrol or Homeland Security or FEMA. I mean, if you could see the whole document, you'd see who we report to, and it's all the way up the chain through Border Patrol to Homeland Security to FEMA. So I think it is for helping them in a number of things, but one of them in particular is to find undocumented immigrants. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you both for appearing tonight to answer these questions. It's my understanding that Jefferson County has no sexual assault nurse examiner services. Have you seen this adversely affect law enforcement in our community or for the women who have been raped? What role do you see for the Sheriff's Office in helping to bring these services to our community, and what would you like these services to look like?
Joe Noel.
Well, a big part of my career was I've been a detective, and I've worked for a long time. My main focus was working sex crimes, and when I was a detective back in the olden days, if you want to say, we actually had a doctor here in town who could do sexual assault exams. And for those that don't know what that is, if someone's been sexually assaulted, they have to see a specialist that can look for the evidence of some kind of forced crime or something like that. So right now, the closest sexual assault nurse is in Bremerton at Harrison Hospital. And the problem we run into is for court cases, you know, for a case, we need to have that evidence. And a lot of times, we have to tell the victim that they have to drive to Bremerton and go get an exam done. Now, in the past, we would actually, CPS would help provide rides, because it's not just adults, this is for little kids too. And it's really a burden on the family to have to, you have this traumatic experience, then you're told, oh yeah, you have to go over to Bremerton and meet with a nurse, and they're going to do some stuff to your son or your daughter or to yourself, and then send that information to the sheriff's office. But it is something that we need, and if there was a way, I know through the years it's kind of changed, and we used to be able to provide rides, and anything the sheriff's office can do to support that, I am fully behind. And I know there's a push now to have our own sexual assault nurse in the county, which would really be a boon for everybody. It's something that we really need, and that's one of the one of the crimes that we investigate a lot are sex crimes. Thanks,
David.
Thanks for your question. By the way, it's a question that really impacts the whole county. I'm on the Dove House Board, and I've been on the Dove House Board for the last 5 years. I'm the former chair of the Dove House Board, and I work very closely with Beulah, the executive director. And we have a passion for having advocates be with these women when they go to Bremerton. When a police officer or a deputy stops a sexual assault victim, they will call, and the first call goes to the advocate. And Beulah will provide an advocate, and that advocate will stay with the sexual assault victim until they are in Bremerton and back home again. I think it's very, very important for that, and I support that 100%. And like my opponent said, it'd be nice to have a sane nurse here in the county. It's been a long time, but thank you very much for the question.
Next question.
My name's John Langdon. I live here in Port Townsend. This is a question for both of you concerning endorsement of active sheriffs. There are 39 counties in the state of Washington. 26 of the active, that is in-office sheriffs, have endorsed Dave Stanko. None have endorsed Detective Noel. I'd like to know why that is.
And David, you go first.
John, thanks for asking the question. I had two more sheriffs endorse me today. Ozzie Kanetovich from Spokane and the sheriff from Clitticast County. So that was a very good question. And beyond that, I cannot answer why, other than these men that I work with, they're contemporary sheriffs. They belong to the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. We meet together at least twice a year. I am on the legislative committee for the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. I'm also on the field response team peer review board that is going to drive a grant for field responses for mental health, and that will also move into sexual assault and any other type of intervention we can do, but it's mainly a grant for mental health people. And again, all the sheriffs are working very hard towards the accreditation process, John, and the sheriffs are working very hard for the Living Strategic Plan, but I appreciate that question. Thank you.
And Joe.
That's a good question. 37, there's 39 counties, 39 sheriffs, and 37 of them support my opponent. And you have to ask yourself, how much do they know about my opponent? How much time does he spend with them? He goes to a WASPIC conference. I used to go to those. You meet the sheriff, you eat dinner and stuff, you go to some training. And also, I've been told from former sheriffs that if you are a member of WASPIC as a sheriff, you will likely get the endorsement of all the sheriffs. Doesn't mean they know how you work. It doesn't mean what your they know what your department's like. I have the endorsement of the last four Jefferson County sheriffs. And I work with all of them, work side by side with them. They know what I'm like. They've seen my work. They know what I do. And they endorse me. I spent years with them, not a couple weeks out of the year.
And next question.
I'm delighted to hear that you both are interested in the whole issue of having a sexual assault nurse in the area, a certified sexual assault nurse who can take evidence to court that won't be dismissed. I'm wondering if you can tell me why we don't have one.
Joe?
It comes down to money.
That sounds right.
Just like like I said, in the old days where we had one, the equipment she had actually belonged to her. It's called a colposcope, and it's really just one of the things that they use. It's really a fancy way to take pictures, and they're very expensive, and I don't know what it has advanced to now, but because of the amount of exams there would be and the cost for the equipment and it's training that they have to repeat and, you know, keep getting certified in, that it just wasn't financially feasible to have for the hospital to have one or for a private doctor to have their own practice doing that.
David Stanko.
I think it probably is budgetary, but it's also a concern for Dove House. And I know Beulah and the board and her staff are working very hard to move in that direction. As to when that will happen, I don't have a timeline for you. But I think getting a hold of Beulah and the Dove House staff will help maybe your concerns for that particular issue, because I know the board and the Dove House staff are in favor of that.
James Fritz.
Yeah. How badly does poverty, lack of jobs, and homelessness affect the sheriff's department? Both of you, either of you.
I think it's a very prevalent question here. I think that we have the largest budget in the county, $6 million. But we also have a 365-day, 24-hour coverage that we have to maintain. We have to go all the way from the West End, where we have two resident deputies. We have a contract with the Ho Indian tribe, which is very poverty-stricken. The BIA gives us money to help keep our deputies out there, and it's still not enough. The Ho Indian tribe gives us about $200,000 a year. It costs about $140,000 a year to keep a deputy on the road. So it's not even enough out there, but we still have an obligation to take care of the people in Jefferson County. Absolutely, I think that poverty drives the people that we have in our jail. Right now, we're averaging 52 people in our custody, souls in our jail, and a lot of them have substance abuse problems and mental health problems. We're trying to address that, and I think that housing is an issue here. I think jobs are an issue here. I don't see where, by the way, we can find those without bringing jobs in, but that's not why we're here. We're mandated with public safety. We're mandated with taking care of the souls in our jail. We're mandated with the safety of the whole community. We had a deputy in a 19-minute fight down in Brennan about 8 months ago. That's not acceptable. We need to have backup, too, because I have to keep my deputies safe. My job is in the deputies' home, safe to their families at night, as well as be sure that you're safe in your homes. Thank you.
Joe.
I think the question was, how did jobs and homelessness affect our jobs at the sheriff's office?
How does lack of jobs, homelessness, and poverty affect the sheriff's department's crime
load? Yeah, I don't think that's an easy question to answer. We have people that have jobs and people that have money that end up in our jail too. And we have people that have homes that end up in our jail. And we have homeless people that don't end up in our jail. Same thing with people that don't have jobs. One thing that we have to deal with is the public's, you know, the citizens sometimes want to report a homeless person in a certain area or something like that. And we are faced with, you know, what are we going to do about that when there's nowhere to take that person? So, I couldn't say what kind of impact that really has, you know, on our day-to-day activities. We deal with all kinds of people. And that's one thing I've learned over the years was, everybody's capable of doing something. It doesn't matter where you come from or you know, where you were born or how much money you have, so or if you have a house or not.
I have a written question I'm going to read, and then we'll get to you. The question is, and this will be answered first by Joe Noel, what is your stance on guns in the schools and on arming teachers? And that's for Joe.
Well, I don't think there should be guns in the schools, and I don't think that teachers should be armed. I think we need to do more than that. For a while, we were really engaged with the schools about 4 years ago, and that's changed. And we had a couple deputies that are no longer here. I talked about some deputies that had left, and they were the two that were mainly in charge of carrying on. We were working primarily with Chimicum School, but it included all the schools in the whole county. We were working with Port Townsend Police Department and the Port Townsend schools to come up with a strategy for dealing with school shootings and violence in the schools and things like that. And we were having people going to training together, and we were planning to have some exercises and activities, and that just kind of dwindled away. And right now, I know that we've done some ALICE training, which teaches people what to do if you are in a situation where there's an active shooter, and that's a good thing. But I think we need to get back in with the schools and the fire departments and the other first responders and pick up where we left off and move forward into making our schools a safe place. But I don't think, you know, having guns in the school or arming the teachers, you know, is a good idea. When I first heard about arming the teachers, I thought, oh, and then you just have to think a little farther and realize that that's kind of a wild idea. So, thank you.
David.
Well, my opponent and I are on the same page. I don't believe we should have guns in the school or arm teachers also, but I disagree with my opponent. We have had a continuing collaborative training with the firefighters, with the school districts. We've met with them and had tabletop exercises to try to find out, like from Chimicum or Brennan or Quilcene, how we would operate. Active shooter training is very important, that you work together in a partnership, because when the police get there to take care of the threat, right behind us will come the firefighters, right behind them will come the paramedics to fix that. And yes, ALICE training is very important also. It's the new acronym to try to help teachers and students and business owners. If you have a business with any amount of people, the ALICE training will help you cope with that type of situation. And also, we had school districts there, we had fire districts there, we had multiple police departments there. So I disagree with my opponent. We do work together collaboratively and as a partnership. Thank you.
Next question in the back.
A couple weeks ago, I was in traffic court again. And I watched a clever attorney get 7 cases in a row for traffic violations dismissed because whether it was the city or the county had failed to produce the documentation necessary to enable the defense attorney to defend the defendant. So it was a lack of record production. Another word for it was sloppy record keeping by either the county or the city, and I don't know which it was. So my question is, I think Dave mentioned that your staff is 50. Is that right?
Yes.
Then you have, I assume, lots of volunteers. The underlying question is, what do you see as the staffing needs going forward? Do you see a need for additional staff, additional volunteers, and a special person to review all requests for documents so that those traffic scofflaws don't walk out of that courtroom with no charges? Thank you.
David.
Well, the first thing is, Barbara, slow down. You won't be in traffic court.
It was a seatbelt.
Oh, a seatbelt rule. Okay. Staffing is an issue. It's an ongoing challenge with the county. We had a staffing study done when I first took office. We need 7 more deputies by 2020. I asked for 2 deputies in 2016, got none. I asked for 2 deputies in 2017, got none. I asked for 2 deputies this year, and the commissioners gave us money for a half a deputy. What that translates to is as for salary and benefits, and then we'll be creative and find the money for the body to be on the street from that perspective. Our jail is, we're not up to staff yet. We have our jail superintendent here. You can ask him later, but we're working on it. We have a couple in the academy right now, and we have an opening still. We have a control room operator that's helping. But to your point, Barbara, we have one person working records right now, and the other person, as an example, has been off sick for a week, and we have one person on L&I. So we are trying to actively mitigate those problems so we can be fully staffed. But we work very closely. The Undersheriff Art Frank works very closely with the prosecutor and Michael Haas's team to be sure that the paperwork gets up there in a timely manner. As to what happens between our office and his office, I can't comment on that. But we do produce the paperwork up there as we should every single day. Thank you for the question.
And Joe.
Well, as far as the tickets go in court, that shouldn't be happening. And I would say that's the fault of a supervisor that let some paperwork get through that shouldn't have got through, or not keeping track of what their people are doing. And if that's happening, they need to be held accountable and make sure that that does happen, because it's a waste of the deputy's time to write the tickets. It's a waste of the court to have to deal with that stuff. So that needs to be taken care of before it leaves our office, if it was our office. As far as our staff being 50, I just want everyone to understand that you probably already do, but that includes corrections, office staff. We don't have 50 deputies. I just want everyone to understand that. And the staffing needs for the future, like I said, I've been at the sheriff's office 28 years. The day I started, we needed more people then. We've always needed people, and it's just always that way. And most police departments, sheriff's offices around the country, we all need more people. And one thing that we have to do is we have to work smarter. We have to put our resources where crimes are happening. We have to be on top of that stuff. We have to analyze our data. We have to see, you know, where do we need to have our people to make the most effect with few resources that we have. At the same time, you know, always pushing forward to try to get some extra bodies on patrol. Thank you.
Quite likely the last question, Norm Norton.
Regarding the gun range issue, your comments, efforts to mitigate, whatever you have to say. Thank you.
Joe.
Well, what gun range are you talking about? Yeah. We all know I think most of us know there's some things going on with gun ranges. And in my opinion, something's going to happen with gun ranges. Gun ranges, outdoor gun ranges, I think, are becoming a thing of the past. And we need to start looking at, or I shouldn't say we, but a business person needs to start looking at how they could have a gun range that sits indoors, where it's not going to make a bunch of noise. I really think that's where this is going to go. Because people just aren't putting up with that stuff anymore. You know, we've always used the Sportsman's Club where we shoot for the sheriff's office, and you know, there may have been some few complaints years ago, but it's getting to be more and more. And I think that, you know, I've been around long enough that it seems like more and more in the news and things you hear, there's people that move into something next door to something stinky, and a little few months later, that stinky place is shut down, even though the people came last. So I think that's going to be the same thing with the gun ranges. And, you know, I know there's a new one that someone wants to put in down in the Tarboo area. I don't think it's the sheriff's job to decide where a gun range can be or who can go to that. I think that our job is to enforce the law and not get involved in civil issues on where things should be or have an opinion one way or another. Thank you.
David.
Thanks for the question. We are involved in the shooting range controversy. I have a representative on the coalition that is working with the county to see if we can mitigate the gun range challenge here. And how that works out is going to be up to the committee. They have to report to the commissioners within a certain amount of time. I don't recall exactly how many weeks that are. I personally put an indoor range together down in the Orange County area in Fullerton. And my opponent is right. Absolutely does it mitigate noise. Absolutely does it mitigate lead. Absolutely can you mine the lead out of the rubber backstop. You can do that. The county has the property to do that, but it's going to be up to the other folks to on this committee to see what and how they want to work with that particular issue. As far as the former gun range, Joe, my partner's actually right over here, my opponent. We have to enforce the laws. And I did that with the former owner of Discovery Bay. The county had an ordinance back in 2009 to not allow military training there, to not allow law enforcement training there, and I enforced that because we have rules. We have laws. We also had our deputies were allowed to work out there. You can't do that. We have rules against that. So, yes, I enforce the rules. I enforce the laws. I'm not in a popularity contest. I'm not here to please people. I'm here to keep you safe and be sure that our community's safe. Thank you.
First 3-minute closing statement from David Senko.
Thank you. First of all, I want to say I thank you very much for coming tonight. You're taking time out of your own day and time out of your own life to come here, candidates. I want to thank my opponent for running. This is deja vu for me. I've been your sheriff for 4 years. I like this job. I want your vote. I really need another 4 years to complete the accreditation process. I need another 4 years to continue to work on our strategic planning process. And I want you to know that this WASPIC that my opponent kind of poo-poos, they don't. They're very serious about this. It's called the Dirty Dozen. What sheriff's offices and police departments in trouble? Going it alone. You can't do things yourself, folks. My opponent says he can do the strategic plan. He can do this. He can do that. I can't. I need your help. I need the community's help. I need other law enforcement help. I can't do it myself. Public records. It comes back to sting us. Jails. Another problem with us. Property room management. I had a property room that wasn't inventoried in 20 years. Training. Spot on. It's budget. $6 million budget, but I have to be sure that I have the money before I can do training. We have a training plan and a training sergeant that does that. Complaint management. I came into 5 pending complaints. That's libelous. It's not good. I can't read it. My glasses again. Promotions. I've had to promote people. I've had to fire people. I've had to demote people. It's not fun. It's not pleasant. But it has to be done for the good of the community and for the good of the organization. Administration. We are low on staff. I do need an effective administrative staff to keep us out of trouble. And, you know, no planning. You need a plan and a vision. Our strategic plan is employee-driven. It just doesn't sit on the shelf. It's where we go. But it's all about you. It's all about public safety, folks. It's not about us. It's about you. I don't care who sits behind the desk of sheriff, whether it's me, which I want to be, I want your vote, or whether it is my opponent. It's all about you and about how we can help you. You can't go it alone, folks. Do you understand that? I don't see how people can say that we can go it alone. You can't do it with volunteers. I've got, a retired captain that helps me on accreditation. Lastly, with my last 30 seconds here, this is not a popularity contest. I have an opponent because I keep folks accountable and responsible for their actions. The people that I've disciplined, the people that I've demoted, look at his endorsement list. See who's on there.
And Joe Noel, last closing statement.
Well, thank you, everybody, for coming, and hope you're enjoying this stuff. I didn't set out to work in law enforcement. I started out as a backcountry ranger in the Buckhorn Wilderness and a high school biology teacher. As it turns out, that was good prep for this line of work. It isn't easy for me to get up here and talk about how great I am, but I guess that's what you have to do to get elected, and I want to be elected. I think we need change at the sheriff's office. I've worked at the right hand of the previous 4 Jefferson County sheriffs. I've learned a lot from them, both what to do and what not to do. They personally know me and support me. They know that the deputies and staff will be able to look to me for leadership. They know me as a person of integrity, compassion, and dedication. I have proven leadership, and I have shown that I can be a partner with the community and other agencies, and I am proud to say that I have done that throughout my career. I don't know where this thing comes up about me doing it alone. The one thing that I would do alone, and I wouldn't really be alone, but I wouldn't have had to hire someone for like over $20,000 to come in and show me how to do a strategic plan. I think that's the sheriff's responsibility to know what the strategic plan should be. The sheriff should know where the department needs to go, and he should know how to lead it there. I think that the community and the employees should be involved with the strategic plan, but I don't think that you need to hire someone to come in and show us how to do it. And anyway, do it alone. That might be the one thing I think I could do alone, but I wouldn't do it alone without my employees and the community, but I wouldn't need to bring someone in. And my 35 years of local law enforcement experience in Jefferson County has prepared me to take this next step in making a positive difference in our community, and I'd appreciate your vote. Thank you very much.
We have two candidates for county prosecutor, Michael Haas, James Kennedy. We had our coin flip. The two attorneys reached for the coin simultaneously, but I got it back. The winner was Michael Haas. He will make his three-minute opening statement.
Thank you, everybody, for coming out. Thank you to the league. Thank you to the AAUW. This is obviously an important part of our civil processes. My name is Mike Haas. I'm your county prosecuting attorney. I've been your county prosecutor for 3.5 years now. I've been an attorney for a total of 30 years of that, spent 15 years in prosecution, 11 doing criminal defense work, and another 4 years in a combination of civil slash insurance defense. I'm not too proud of the insurance defense work. Sorry about that. I've lived in Jefferson County now for about 15 years. I'm married to Heather. I married way above my pay grade. We have four wonderful children that we've adopted from Ethiopia at three different times, ages 9 through 15. We're very, very lucky people. I grew up in a small town in southeast Alaska, not unlike Port Townsend, a little town called Haines. And it was an artist community, a timber community at one point in time, and of course, tourism. And it also has a fort, very much like Fort Worden out there. As your county prosecutor, I'm proud of a number of accomplishments that we've had. In the office. One of the things that we've done is we're able to finally bring the Michael Pierce double homicide case to arrest at the Court of Appeals level and also through actions at the State Supreme Court. So that nightmare is over at this point in time. We have, one of the things that's been very important to me, and when I ran for office, I wanted to bring the office into a more progressive environment for prosecution. And so that's meant a focus on the therapeutic courts. So we've got four different therapeutic courts in Jefferson County, a drug court, a mental health court, a family therapeutic court, and a topside, which is provides wraparound services for juveniles. The prosecutor's office is responsible to act as the gatekeeper in three of those courts. And we've had some great successes. Drug court graduations have approximately doubled over what they were with the prior administration. And yet at the same time, we're also focusing on the serious cases, and prosecutions of sex offenders have more than doubled over the prior administration. One of the things that has occurred is you may hear some talk about turnover. Well, I've taken advantage of that, and I've brought together a team of one of the best units of attorneys that we've ever had in the county. We've got a combined level of experience of 117 years now. We've got former Los Angeles County District Attorney. Oh, time's up. Thanks.
All right. Good evening, everyone. My name's James Kennedy. I'd like to thank the League and the AAU for putting on tonight's forum, and thank you, everyone, for showing up for that. Currently, I work in Clallam County as a deputy prosecutor, where I prosecute adult felonies in Superior Court. Before that, I worked here in Jefferson County, where I prosecuted misdemeanors, juvenile crimes, and also felonies in, or adult felonies in Superior Court. And prior to that, I worked in Yakima. I live here in Jefferson County with my wife and my two soon-to-be three kids. And before that, I was an officer in the United States Army. I say that because I've not been an attorney my entire life, but I've actually had a job that required leadership training and management experience. During that time, I had the opportunity to lead troops on two separate deployments to Iraq. I've been in charge of units ranging in size from 40 to 70 individuals. And I say that because the type of experience that you get from that, such as the administration, the leadership, and the management, is not something that you get from being an attorney. It's separate. And it's important because when we look at the prosecuting attorney's office over the last 3 years, I think that management and leadership and administrative experience are what we need the most. We have seen turnover approach 150%. The loss of institutional knowledge to the office has been devastating. Child support enforcement, one of the critical functions to the office, was allowed to lapse. The office has also been repeatedly fined by the Court of Appeals for not filing briefs on time. And this, quite frankly, has not gone unnoticed. I have the overwhelming support from members of our county staff, court staff, law enforcement, from our two chemical dependency treatment agencies, Safe Harbor and Believe in Recovery. I even have the support of some of our local defense attorneys. And what do these individuals and agencies have in common? These are the folks who have weekly, if not daily, contact with the prosecuting attorney's office. And they support me. And I think that speaks volumes because they have seen the change that has taken place in that county over the past 3 years. I am running because I think this county wants a candidate who's not afraid of accountability, but understands that compassion needs to be shown to those who have drug addictions and mental illness. This county wants a candidate who will put the needs of the community first and will treat crime victims with respect. This county wants a candidate who will show up to the office more than twice a week, and this county wants a candidate who will get in there, turn the office around, and start serving the public again. Thank you.
So now we'll take questions from those of you who have questions to ask. I'm going to read a question first. What training has the department done, if any, on implicit bias? Is this something you would consider doing for staff? That is, that training, and we'll start with James. And you can.
So when I worked at the Jefferson County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, there wasn't any training that was done on implicit bias. I have had some since I started working in Clallam County, but it tended to be more tangential to whatever the core training module was that we were working on at that time. And we've had some very good trainings on sexual assault, child abuse, and domestic violence. That said, implicit bias is something that we do all need to be trained on. We work very closely with law enforcement. We bring in jurors from the community, we select our jurors, and we also make charging decisions with respect to the crimes that are reported to us by law enforcement. And we have to evaluate that. We have to know what is a legitimate charge, which isn't, which case that we get might have involved some implicit bias. That said, look around. It's no secret here that this is an overwhelmingly white community that we live in. But that said, it is important that we make sure that everyone gets treated equally. We're not 100% white. We do have minorities here, and everyone needs to be treated equally at all levels of government, every step of the way, whether we're helping them as victims, whether we're prosecuting them, whether we're treating them as witnesses, or whether they're coming in as jurors to sit in. Thank you.
Michael House.
When I came into office, I inherited an all-male team of attorneys. Since I've been in office now, 50% of the attorneys in the office are female. So I think that that is partially why our sex offense prosecutions have increased. In terms of actual implicit bias, the training that we've had is somewhat limited. It's through the done through the Washington Association of Prosecuting Attorneys. All county prosecutors in the state are members of WAPA, and they are the go-to folks for the training. There's at times there've been there's been an issue of training, but one of the difficulties that we have is there are five attorneys in the office, and so whenever a deputy goes out to training, that's 25% of the deputy prosecutors that have left the office. And obviously, if we've sent two, then there's 50%. So we take advantage of the WAPA trainings that are available to us, and WAPA has had some great programs. I think that in terms of, as Mr. Kennedy alluded to, this area is predominantly white, and what we have here, the bias that we see coming into the court system is actually a bias against the poor and the indigent. And that's a problem. Instead of targeting blacks or Latinos or things like that, you do see situations where the poor, particularly in you know, different parts, more rural parts of Jefferson County, I wouldn't say they're targeted, but it's a problem that it does exist in the county.
Hopefully, the deputies in the office have a great deal of experience in the world. They're all significantly experienced attorneys, and so they themselves, have had to deal with the issues of bias. But anyway, the biggest training does come through the Prosecutors Association.
Question in the back.
Hi. One of the candidates emphasized a lot of experience in a leadership position in the military. However, this is an attorney job, and so I'd like to know how much experience each candidate has supervising attorneys.
Michael Haas.
Thank you. So I've supervised attorneys in three different offices. Obviously, the Jefferson County Prosecutor's Office. I was part of a Seattle insurance defense firm that had a satellite office in Port Townsend. I supervised that office. And then I was a senior public defender in Okanagan County, and I supervised the felony attorneys in that office. I've supervised or mentored approximately 15 attorneys throughout my career. Three veterans in my office, and I've asked them about this question. What's the correlation between military training and organization and supervision and a civilian law office? And they have pretty much, for the most part, said there is no correlation. Supervising attorneys, I like to say at times, particularly litigation attorneys, is like herding cats. They are intelligent people, they are hardworking people, and they have their opinions. And one of the things that we do encourage in our office is healthy debate. We try to push back on cases so that we have really vetted the case, the best resolution. And so a top-down type of administration doesn't really work, I don't believe, in a civilian law office. They're completely different types of entities.
James Kennedy.
So the fundamentals of leadership, management, administration are universal. They're not just something that one would find in the military, but the reason why I bring that up is because it was really such a fabulous experience to work with people from every continent except Antarctica, people from all walks of life, people who had grown up in villages without electricity, others who grew up in Manhattan, and getting all those people together in one area, working together as a team under adverse circumstances is just something that I will take with me for the rest of my life. It was truly a gift to have been able to have experienced that, and it's one of the greatest things I feel like I've ever done with my life. That said, that sort of leadership and management experience, once you've been focused or had to deal with some of the things that tend to be a little bit more difficult, hard, or adverse, it makes some of the more day-to-day things when it comes to managing an office a little bit easier to deal with. And it's not, even though it seems as though it's entirely top-down, it is not. A platoon leader is someone who comes right out of college and they're paired with someone who has been an enlisted sergeant in the military for 15 years, okay? It's a collaborative effort. It's not just top down. We work very closely together with everyone there because with that many different people, that many different walks of life, with that many different backgrounds, you can truly have a great organization there because you have so many different perspectives, and that's what makes it such a wonderful experience to have that sort of inbuilt flexibility. That said, I don't have any experience supervising other attorneys per se, but that said, even self-starters and people who work hard, they still need direction. They still need structure within an office. They still need to understand what their job is, why they're there. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, microphone in the back.
Thank you. I'm someone who sticks his nose in the county's budget frequently, and I want to inform everyone that 60% of the county's budget goes to criminal justice, the prosecutor's office, the courts, the sheriff's department. Now, Mr. Haas proudly admits he now has half his prosecutors as female since he's been in, but that means he's had a 50% turnover since he's been in office. Management style and leadership are of important thing, and so is budget budgeting within the whole county network of all the 28 departments. How are both of you, how are you going to manage working with the other departments budgetary-wise? And is 50% turnover a good thing in a small county like this?
Thank you for your question, James Kennedy.
Thank you. So it was a little bit closer to 150, and turnover happens. It happens in every office. But when it's everybody all at once and it's a continued revolving door, it's really a bad thing. You lose institutional knowledge. Small county governments like the kind that we have here in Jefferson County really live off the institutional knowledge that the employees bring in who've been working there for decades. We can't necessarily afford to bring in someone across country who's an expert in a certain field. We really need to have that knowledge here, stay here, and when that person leaves, do a timely transfer to whoever's going to take it over. And that loss really hurt the office. Now, with respect to the budget, it has to be collaborative. The thing is that we know that the sheriff's office is expensive, but they got lots of fancy equipment. The rest of the offices, I think, tend to be a little bit less expensive. I do have experience managing budgets. Everyone knows that the military gets a big fat budget, but the thing is, I was a logistics officer and no one cared about logistics. So I had to fight for every scrap of money, parts, and things like that I could, and manage it and make an effective team out of it. And I was able to do that time and time again. I believe in collaborating on money, because robbing Peter to pay Paul doesn't help when we're all part of the same organization. We rely on the assessor, the treasurer, the auditor, the clerks, everybody to get our work done. Damaging one to help the other in the end will damage all the organizations there, and it makes everyone inherently weaker.
And Michael Haas.
Thank you. So when you lose people, you have a challenge, and you also have an opportunity. We lost all four attorneys that I started out with in a fairly short period of time. And, you know, I don't know if I ever heard the full story or the full honest story of why that occurred. I suspect that it had to do with differences in the way in which we thought that the cases should be prosecuted. I was elected, in my opinion, with nearly 62% of the vote, to take the office in a progressive direction, and with a greater emphasis on the therapeutic courts. There are others that I don't think shared that vision, and so they left. Fortunately, they were all able to find better paying jobs with other challenges. But we brought some great people in. My opponent, who was then, I think, a three-year attorney, maybe a four-year attorney, was replaced with an attorney with 20 years of experience as an assistant Los Angeles County District Attorney with gang prosecution experience and 17 murder prosecutions under her belt. That was a good thing for Jefferson County. Our chief deputy, chief criminal deputy, who had 5 years of experience, was replaced by a 20-year veteran with a ton of civil and criminal experience. Our civil deputy prosecutor was replaced by an all-star that is an all-star beyond all-stars. This guy, Phil Hunsucker, is the hardest working attorney I've ever encountered in my entire 30-year career. He is amazing, he is brilliant, and he has done great things for the county. So yes, there's been turnover, but we've also turned that into opportunity, and I think that we've done a really great job in terms of who we have in the office now.
The last question goes to Doug Milholland.
Greetings. My greatest concern at this point in the United States, our national journey, is the growing military-industrial budget and the fact that we live next to the West Coast's largest weapons transfer depot. Quite frankly, I'm concerned that a former officer in the military will be predisposed to look at people involved in civil protest asking for a change of course in our national journey towards peaceful resolutions and away from such deep allegiance to military-industrial global dominance. I'm just curious, how can you be a servant for people who are making the kinds of decisions to stand up in front of a weapons transfer depot and say, please lock this gate? I mean,
thank you, Doug. That's a good question. We'll start. That's really a question for James Kennedy. We'll start with him, Michael Hoskin, ponder how he might want to answer.
All right, so I'm going to let you in on a dirty little secret. I was commissioned as an officer in the United States Army in May 2003. In February 2003, before I was commissioned, myself and my roommate drove down to Manhattan and participated in the nation's largest protest against the Iraq War. So I knew I wanted to serve my country, and a dumb policy decision wasn't going to stop that, but it didn't mean I agreed with the dumb policy decision. I know you're concerned about someone like me. How would I treat protesters? Well, I also actually happen to be a card-carrying member of the ACLU and have been for 12 years. Or not 12 years, sorry, since 2012. Civil rights is what we protect. It's the reason why some of us, myself included, joined the military, is to protect those rights, to protect protest. And now I find myself in a different form of public service. Public service is my calling. It is to serve everybody, and it is to serve all of their civil rights, and it's to make sure that everyone's rights are observed. So just because the path I have taken involved military does not mean that I'm especially militant. All right, please understand that. Thank you.
And Michael Haas.
It's a tough question, Doug. You know, I'll tell you what has scared me in the past, and it still is a concern, is the growing militarization of civilian law enforcement agencies. I think that what Sheriff Stanko did when he got rid of that piece of war equipment, it was the right thing to do morally and as a practical matter. I know that he lost some support from some of the troops, but I think it was the right thing to do. You know, when you've got folks protesting out at the number one weapons depot for the West Coast of the United States, you know, we have to make sure that their rights are protected. The flip side is, as a prosecutor, you can't just walk away from the prosecution of criminal cases. You do have that discretion, and that's why it's really important who you elect into office, because you do have that whole plea bargaining and charging policy issue that I talked about before. You know, sometimes it involves looking at the what are the rules out there? What actually constitutes trespassing? For example, out at Indian Island, the Navy's painted blue stripes claiming certain property out there is U.S. government property. It's not. It belongs to the county. And so part of protecting the citizenry is simply being knowledgeable about the actual facts that you have to work with. You know, in terms of how we're going to solve those issues, I'm not sure that's going to happen in this race particularly. But I've tried to be very tolerant while at the same time protecting the rights of others. And that can be a very delicate dance at times.
Michael Haas and James Kennedy each get a 3-minute closing statement. The flip of the coin says that James Kennedy leads off.
So I want to thank everyone again for coming out tonight. In this race, there is a choice. We have an individual who is an active litigator of criminal cases, who is not scared to take the tough cases to trial, who doesn't mistreat victims of sexual assault, and works closely with law enforcement to make sure the job gets done and the job gets done correctly. 30 years of experience did not stop the office from having to find an outside attorney at the cost of thousands of dollars to settle the Pierce case. Active litigation experience is what you need to handle cases, not just time under your belt. The office also needs someone with active management and leadership experience to take the office, which I used to work at, and I worked with many of the individuals who are there now, and give it some direction, to train them. I have a vision to make that office into specialists in traffic offenses, sex crimes, child abuse, and domestic violence. Those are the crimes that afflict this community the most. And we can do that by sending our folks to training that takes place around the country. A lot of this training does not come at an exorbitant cost. Some of it's free, some of it's grant funded. Some of it we can work closely with entities like the Dove House, and they can provide the money for it. That was the case in Clallam County when our Dove House equivalent called Healthy Families sent nine individuals of prosecutors and law enforcement to the National Child Advocacy Training Center in Huntsville, Alabama for a week of training. That was nothing short of remarkable. We can send people to the Washington Homicide Investigators Conference that happens every spring. We can send people to the ICAC, which is Internet Crimes Against Children, which is another way of saying kiddie porn. That's actually can be a pretty complicated type of crime to prosecute because you have to know a lot about computers. A lot of times people use Dropboxes and things on the internet. You have to get training on that. It can't just be the detective, it has to be the prosecutor. They have to know how to explain that stuff to a jury. These are all types of training conferences that my current office sends people to. So we have people that are specialized. And like I mentioned before about the forensic interview training, that's another one. Jefferson County doesn't do that. They don't send people there. They're not specializing. And if you don't know the best practices right now, how are you supposed to keep up? How are you supposed to keep up when the law changes? We have multiple levels of government, multiple levels of a judiciary. They're constantly messing with the laws. You have to keep up on that stuff. And it requires being an active participant in our legal and law enforcement community. So that is my vision with the prosecutor's office, to really get the folks trained on the things that afflict this community, to turn us into a bunch of specialists so we can get the job done. Thank you.
And Michael Haas.
So the good thing is, the good news, is that office already exists. That's what we have in the Jefferson County Prosecutor's Office. We have a team of attorneys with 117 years of experience. We exercise and utilize best practices. We have a phenomenal group called ORCA, the Organized Response to Child Abuse. Our office actively participates in that. We are involved in JOIN, the Juvenile Offender Information Network. Our office actively participates in that. We're involved in the DART project, which involves domestic abuse. We're bringing that back to life at this point in time. The Clallam County Prosecutor's Office, I'm not sure what the numbers are, but I think they're at least three times as large as the Jefferson County Prosecutor's Office in terms of actual numbers of deputy prosecutors. In the fantasy world, it would be great to send my attorneys to training every single week. I'd love to do that. But the reality is small offices just don't work that way. If you take, for example, the number of attorneys I have, multiply that by, you know, 3-4 days of training every year, multiply that by sick leave, multiply that by vacation time, you suddenly realize that you have lost half of an FTE in an office that is already still down from where we were in 2008. In 2008, we had 12.5 FTEs. Right now, we're down to 11 FTEs, including myself. And the caseload has not gotten smaller. So there are some practical realities associated with training. We send folks to training as much as we possibly can, and I think that we are doing one hell of a great job for the citizens of Jefferson County. Specialization. The family of the victim in the Pierce case, they wanted a 5-year attorney to handle the appeal in that particular case. He had 1, 2, maybe 3 appeals under his belt. I went out, I outsourced it. I thought about doing it myself. I was at that point, I think I had about 25 appeals under my belt to the Court of Appeals or to the State Supreme Court. We outsourced it, and we outsourced it to an attorney with over 200 appeals under his belt, and we won. And I think that the $12,000, $14,000 that we spent was well worth it to have that kind of quality. You know, I went to a training a bunch of years ago, and there were some King County deputy prosecutors talking. And the King County Deputy Prosecutor's Office in the child support section, which is alive and functioning quite well in Jefferson County, I don't know where my client or where my opponent's information is coming from, but that in King County, they have 4 separate units in the child support unit. We don't have that kind of luxury. We are all generous. We have to be generous. Our felony deputies are, thank you so much for coming out. We really appreciate it.